Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Midterm elections can be hard to predict. Typically, voter turnout is lower than in presidential years. The primary is usually uneventful. And if you take a look at the last primary in Sacramento County specifically as an example, 38% of registered voters cast a ballot. Only 30% of eligible voters participated. They're lackluster numbers, but they're actually higher than the statewide average turnout for both registered and eligible voters. Vote by mail, obviously, is now by far the most popular way to vote. But even as easy as it is to vote, clearly not everyone is doing it. Here in California, we just had a recall election last year, followed by a primary a few months later in June. And now here we are. Election day is just 2 weeks away. But will the enthusiasm for this midterm be different? We have an important abortion proposition on the ballot, a governor seat up for grabs, several local and statewide races, and local measures that have sparked debate. Time to get a sense of where this election is going, and that brings us to Paul Mitchell with Political Data, a nonpartisan voter information data service. Hello, Paul. Nice to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
So I've been keeping track with your daily emails on how these mail-in ballots are coming in. Over 21 million ballots have been sent out to California. How many have been sent back?
Well, only 1.5 million have been returned. And that's a little lower than we would have expected. It's lower than we saw in the 2020 general election, of course, a presidential election, and really only on par with what we saw in the primary, which you said already. Turnout statewide was around 33% here in Sacramento County, about 38%. So what does it all mean? It's hard to tell. These numbers are really interesting to look at. There's a lot of political consultants and observers for whom this is like their heroin fix every morning. But the reality is that it's kind of like trying to predict what the weather's going to be like on Friday by looking at what the weather was like on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah. How did these returns so far in early mail-in voting compare with the June primary?
So they're very similar in terms of their raw numbers of ballots that have come back in. In terms of partisanship, we're seeing Democrats not being as large a share of these ballots coming in and Republicans being a little bit more. Independents as well are voting a little bit more in the general election, which is traditionally what happens. A lot of them sit out in the primary. And there might not have been a lot of real interesting races for Republicans in the primary as well. That could make some sense. But I think, you know, Democrats are looking at a few different things. One is the fundamentals of midterm elections. The party in power generally loses seats in Congress. The party in power generally has lower turnout. That's one of those big macro fundamentals looking at this election from the 50,000-foot level. Polling recently, we've seen a lot of polling, both public polling and hearing, you know, stories of private polling suggesting that a lot of Democratic supporters are either less enthusiastic or maybe just kind of switching into being undecided in key races. And then we look at these numbers of early ballots. You put all those together, it's starting to look more like a traditional midterm gubernatorial election cycle where the party in power is set to have kind of a lackluster election night.
Yeah, and I think it's important to clarify that, you know, votes are not tallied until after polls close on November 8th, but you are able to get a really good sense of the demographics of who's showing up with early voting.
Yeah, this confuses a lot of people because we'll be able to see who's returned a ballot. The reason this is that the counties know voters hate getting mail and phone calls and all this stuff after they voted. So as a convenience for campaigns and for voters, they scan ballots that they come in so that they can say, oh, Paul and Vicky have already voted. The campaigns then, when they're getting data to contact voters, don't have to keep bugging Vicky and Paul. So if you don't like getting the phone calls and mailers, the best thing to do is just mail your ballot early so those campaigns can take you off their lists. But since we now have this data, we can break it down and we can do in our daily reports or on our website at politicaldata.com a really nice graphic that shows visually on a map where ballots are being returned from, the breakdown by partisanship, age, ethnicity, and we can learn lessons about the electorate as it's shaping up.
What's interesting when you talk about Republicans who have a higher percentage of participating in early mail-in voting, when you've joined us in the past, you know, you've said, you've talked to us about this 180, that historically Republicans would show up with mail-in voting. Obviously hasn't happened in recent years. So is something changing?
So we've talked about this before, but for decades, Republicans have really dominated vote by mail. They would always have these big spikes in the very early numbers of the electorate looking extremely Republican because they, you know, were more likely to be homeowners, more likely to be older. They liked the convenience of voting by mail. We had this flip in 2020 when conspiracy theories started being thrown around by then President Trump, you know, Fox News, a lot of conservative outlets saying you can't trust vote by mail. All kinds of conspiracies that Democrats were throwing the ballots off the Golden Gate Bridge or looking through the little, you know, circles in the ballot to try to see who people, just all kinds of nonsense. It's all been disproven, but in 2020, we had tons of Republican voters who said they weren't going to vote by mail. And we still see that. In polling recently, we saw about a third of Republican voters saying they were going to vote on Election Day, only 6% of Democrats saying they were going to vote on Election Day. Over half of Republicans believe that they can't have confidence in their mail-in ballots. But we are seeing, contrary to that, more Republican ballots coming in, and we consider this as generally a reversion to the mean. As we get further away from these conspiracy theories, as we get further away from these fears, and then what's likely to happen is Republicans will get back to where they were before, which is, you know, learning to stop worrying and love their vote by mail ballot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When looking at your demographics, who's showing up to vote, I wasn't really surprised that, you know, people who are 65 and older and people who are white were actually had the highest percentage at this point in the process. But when it comes to the ages of 18 to 35, they're the largest voting bloc. Has there been any progress in their participation with early mail-in ballots?
Unfortunately not. It is surprising to people that are voter file right now is extremely young. So almost 6 million of our voters are 18 to 34 compared to just over 5 million are seniors. But when you look at who's returned a ballot so far, 800,000 seniors have returned a ballot, only 167,000 18 to 34 year olds. Right now, 16% of the ballots that have come in from seniors. Only 3% of the ballots that have come in from those 18 to 34-year-olds.
What do you think is falling short when it comes to motivating, you know, younger voters to turn in their ballots? I mean, I would imagine some of them, not all, but they're getting mail-in, you know, campaigns and things like that and calls, text messages now. What's falling short?
Well, we used to joke that seniors returned their ballots quicker because they were the only ones who knew where they kept their stamps. And I honestly don't know where my stamps are. And
same.
I'm not 18 to 34 by a long shot. But now that we're in an era where you don't even need a stamp to return a ballot, it might just come down to habits. I mean, I know that my in-laws and my parents, they return their bill the minute they get it. My father-in-law, if he's on vacation for a week, he'll get anxious that there's a bill in his mailbox that he needs to mail back in, whereas younger people kind of just let things accumulate and, you know, deal with it whenever they can. Those patterns must fall into kind of how they're voting, and it is something that I think campaigns need to try to figure out, and maybe organizations that focus on young people and renters and minority voters, because a lot of minority voters are those same younger voters, trying to get them into habits. Because mm-hmm. one thing that is interesting is that voting and patterns around voting is really built around habits. And if you can get somebody in the habit of voting a certain way or at a certain time, you know, for one or two election cycles, you can create a lifelong habit from that. And I think a lot of campaign groups need to start focusing on getting these young people to return ballots earlier.
Overall, do they show up? Because I know it's like 2 to 3% right now, but we're pretty early. We have 2 weeks left until the midterm. Looking back at previous elections, does this voting block 18 to 35, what typically is their percentage?
So their percentage will be, you know, 10, 15 points lower than the overall electorate generally in a gubernatorial election cycle, where maybe it's 60% turnout overall. But seniors are at 75 and young people are at 45, 50, 55. Now, the disparity is not as great as we see it in the early votes, where it's essentially, you know, a 5-to-1 ratio between young people and seniors. But there is a disparity, and it is seen in Election Day.
looking overall at just voter turnout, Sacramento County, as I led with, it wasn't very impressive, 38%, but still higher than the statewide average. But this differs greatly across the state. I was looking at numbers as low as 17% in San Bernardino County, upwards of 50% in Alpine County. I mean, they have like 1,000 registered voters or near Tahoe, but still, they have
nothing,
the highest.
Nothing else to do but vote.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area, but it is a very small county. So I guess what areas of the state are strongest in terms of participating in voting?
Well, it's disappointing, but it's the same story. Areas that are more white and affluent, like Marin County, are going to be higher turnout than areas that are more low income and more minority, like Imperial County. And that has ramifications because it means that the ballot measures that are going to pass are going to be reflective of an older, wider share of the electorate. The candidates that get elected are not representative of the state's full 40 million or even the state's 22 million registered voters. It's representative of that smaller slice of Californians that actually participate by Election Day. So we do see that historically. There has been a lot to be that people have done to try to improve it. Moving to all vote by mail has proven to be effective in small percentages of increasing minority and young person turnout. But that is kind of an endemic problem in California and nationally.
Yeah, at the root of this, we're talking about motivation. And I got to tell you, like, the ballot is huge, you know, from local measures to propositions, some that are confusing from 26 to 27 to all of these races. You know, if you're talking about people who are in a different socioeconomic status, they are already juggling a lot. You know, actually going through all of these races is incredibly time consuming.
Oh, absolutely. And we saw one election where I think it was Santa Clara County had 85 things on the ballot. That can get really daunting. And I remember when my my stepdaughter voted for the first time, she was in the polling booth forever. And she felt like she had to vote on everything. And it was confusing. And so there are challenges in voting and in getting through that ballot. It is, you know, an amazing right that we have in the U.S. to be able to participate, and an extraordinary right we have in California to not only be able to elect our statewide and local officials, but also to vote on all these ballot measures. It's a form of direct democracy that we don't have in other states. And in other states, they couldn't just snap their fingers and have a constitutional protection for abortion rights on the ballot in this election cycle because they just don't have the means to do that. So there are more things, but it's more opportunity for us to participate. And like I said, if we start developing more habits around voting, we will see higher turnout.
Yeah, obviously, abortion took center stage this year. I mean, we saw people, you know, fan out in rallies and demonstrations across the state, including here at the state capitol. But now inflation is really this big issue. We're talking about cost of living and gas prices. How do you think this national political temperature is impacting local races? Do you think that the topic of abortion is going to be enough to get people out to vote if they're kind of weighing whether to vote at all?
Well, that's definitely what Democrats are hoping, is that their voters will turn out. And we've actually seen some polling very recently looking at what were the issues that you were thinking about when you were voting, asking voters who'd actually return these ballots. And this is a survey of almost 5,000 people. And in that, we saw that for Democrats, the number one and two issues were abortion and the environment, which not a lot of candidates are actually talking about. For Republicans, it was inflation and crime. For independents, it was abortion and inflation. So you can see, like, they're kind of broken into both camps a little bit. One of the things we've learned about campaigns is that oftentimes it's not just about having the right answer. Mm-hmm. It's about the debate being on the issues where you have the most ability to, you know, motivate your voters and have that focus. So if the election going into these last 12 or 13 days is around abortion and maybe like what Donald Trump is doing to run for president again, that should help agitate and excite and turn out Democrats. If the election seems to be a referendum on Biden and gas prices and inflation, that we've seen are the kind of things that are motivating more Republicans and Republican-leaning independents. So we really need to look at these numbers. We want to look at the fundamentals about what happens with midterm elections. And we want to keep a keen eye on not only what is in the news, but what are people talking about at the local coffee shop? What are people thinking about going into the election? Because that might really determine whether or not those Democratic or Republican voters turn out by Election Day.
Yeah. And another curveball is redistricting. People are going to be, a lot of people are going to be voting in different districts. And you were very heavily involved in redistricting in California. What should voters know if they haven't looked at their ballot yet? If it's like sitting on their table and they haven't opened it up and they're going to see some unfamiliar names?
Yeah. So we had redistricting, and a lot of people know that we had redistricting, say, for Congress or the legislature, and they might be expecting, like, oh, maybe I'm no longer in Ami Barra's district, or maybe I'm now in Doris Matsui's district, or, you know, wherever they are around the state, they might see different names on the ballot for those races. What they might not realize is that there was also redistricting for every county supervisor seat and every city council seat and a lot of other local governments, water districts, you know, everything down the ballot. And the redistrictings this cycle were much more impactful in who's representing who because a lot of those reforms that were done at the state level to take the politics out of redistricting, to have a commission, to have better criteria for redistricting, a lot of those filtered down to local governments. So you see in the city of Sacramento, a much more different city council districts because it was done by a commission rather than being done by the council members. We see the same in other parts of the state. And it's an ongoing process. I think every decade we're going to see reforms in redistricting that are going to bring those, you know, lines into, you know, a better harmony with where residents are rather than a better harmony with where politicians and the political interests are.
Yeah. Finally, you know, I've been thinking about this because even though California is a supermajority Democrat state, I mean, there are some key congressional districts that could sway Congress. We can go from a Speaker of the House, from Nancy Pelosi to Kevin McCarthy. You know, how big of a role do you think these California congressional districts are going to play when you pit them up against, you know, places like Georgia and Pennsylvania?
Incredibly important. Now, we're not going to have a role in determining the Senate. A lot of these, you know, races around the country people are focused on are those Senate races. But the House, California has a number of seats, four seats that were Democratic in 2018, went back to Republican in 2020, and now Democrats are trying to pick those up. And what's interesting is a lot of us look at 538 and a lot of those models. There's a feature in there where you can say, okay, well, Democrats win the 27th district and the 20th district. What does that do to the model? And when you do that, it's like a 60% chance, 70% chance that Democrats take control of the House. So these races will matter for control of the House, absolutely. It will determine which Californian will be the Speaker of the House when they, you know, bang the gavel in for the next session. And they are extremely critical, and I think that the campaigns and the national groups are treating them as critical. Mm.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us. I know we're going to see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Paul Mitchell is the vice president of Political Data, Inc. Up next, county registrars from the Sierra Foothills and the Central Valley join us to share how they're pursuing a fair election in the face of burnout and unprecedented tensions from election deniers. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. We'll be right back.